Hello, and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast. My name is Taylor, and on today's episode, I'm actually going to let our guest introduce himself because he does an amazing job walking us through his journey of addiction, trauma, and more that eventually led him to endurance sports. I do just want to give a quick trigger warning as we do cover topics of drug addiction and suicide in this episode, so for anybody that might be sensitive to those topics, please be mindful of that. With that being said, let's get into his amazing story. Please welcome Caleb. Caleb, thank you so much for coming on the podcast this weekend. Hope your weekend's been off to a good start here. I want to just kind of jump right into your journey. I know you've got quite the story to walk through here. So maybe we'll start from the beginning. How'd you get involved with running in the first place?
So I actually got into running when I was in middle school, and I absolutely sucked my seventh grade year of cross country. And my mom wouldn't let me quit, thank God. But I stuck it out. I was the second to last runner, slowest runner on the team. And I remember one of my first practices is we were doing hill repeats. And I fell in front of the whole team. I was coming back down the hill, and I tripped over a rock or something and fell. And I was so embarrassed.
Sure.
And I was already struggling with things because I just wasn't good. And I wanted to quit. Like after that practice, I remember going home and I was just crying and really upset. And I told my mom, I was like, I'm not good at this, and I don't want to continue running. So she was like, no, you started it, so you're going to see this through. And then next year, if you don't want to run, you don't have to. So eventually I finished the season, started building some relationships with some of my teammates. And I came back my eighth grade year and lost the first meet. I got second place overall, and then the rest of the year I went undefeated. And I won a conference championship. So I went from being second to last on the team to winning a conference championship my eighth grade year. And then I started playing football my ninth grade year, and I got out of cross country focusing on football. I continued to run track freshman, sophomore, and junior year. But around that same time, I started getting mixed into party scene, started to just use substances and drugs to kind of escape. I had some childhood trauma that I didn't realize at the time, but that's how I was coping with things, and just getting mixed up in the wrong crowds and everything, and
sure,
the wrong circle of friends and whatnot. And so my junior year of high school, we was on our way to a football game, and one of my buddies pulled out some meth. And was like, they're going to take this before the game. It's going to help us play like Superman.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a junior in high school, 16 years old. And I'm at this crossroads moment. And I didn't even think twice, Taylor. I just went ahead and we mixed it up in our water bottle. And it was off to the races. And that euphoric feeling that I had experienced taking that meth was just on another level. And so it was very, very addicting, right? And yep. I found myself going deeper and deeper into that, and just, you know, getting mixed into partying scene even more and losing myself in the process and who I was as a student, as an athlete, as a person. And that just took me down a slippery slope, and eventually I continued to do really well in school, so I was just barely hanging on. I was functioning, and I remember going to take my SAT my junior year, and I'd been up all night using meth, and I had ran out earlier that night or that morning, and I went to take the SAT, and I remember falling asleep because I was coming down, and I didn't have any more meth, have any more drugs to keep me awake, and I fell asleep during my SAT, and I, like, now looking back, all these red flags are, you know, just everywhere, and
right,
this addiction was starting to consume my life. It was I was barely passing classes. I eventually failed a class my second semester of my senior year, and I had the opportunity to play at the next level, either football or run track. And because I failed those classes, I lost that opportunity. And so I stopped running around that time, and I lost my identity, you know, and my identity was tied up in these external things, running, athlete, all these things. And when I didn't have that anymore, I was just lost. And so combine that with a lot of the childhood trauma, a lot of the things that my mental health, anxiety, depression, just went down this downward spiral really, really fast. I had two sons when I was 19 and 20, almost a year to the day apart. And because of my addiction, I was not able to be a present dad. And I was just absent from their lives. And I was starting to just destroy all the relationships that meant the most to me, my family, the friends who had my best interest in, at heart. I pushed them away and was in a toxic relationship, in multiple toxic relationships. And this went on for like 15 years. And eventually my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer when I was 23 years old. Unemployed. I'm bouncing around from job to job. I'm selling drugs to support my drug habit. And I would work at a job for 2 or 3 weeks, get the first paycheck and bounce. Hit the streets again. I'm selling pills and selling meth and selling cocaine to try to support my habit around this time. Like I said, I'm not a presence in my son's lives. And I got the news that my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I remember just not knowing how to deal with that. And the only thing that gave me comfort for years was the drugs. That's what I went to.
Yeah.
That was my first choice, right? And so I remember getting that news, and I was snorting pills at the time. And mind you, like from the time I graduated high school till I'm 23 years old, I'd been using everything, like all the party drugs, ecstasy. I've been smoking crack, been snorting cocaine, been doing meth, like everything that you can think of. But around this time, I was really, really hooked on pain pills. And so when I got that news, snorting pain pills just wasn't doing it for me anymore. It wasn't numbing the pain. It wasn't helping me escape. It wasn't helping me be comfortable in my own skin anymore. I needed something else to numb everything. And so I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, well, I would always tell myself, make these negotiations and say, like, well, as long as I'm not shooting up, then I'm okay. I'm functioning. I've got things under control. And now I'm at this crossroads moment, getting this news from my dad. And so I find myself sitting in a bathroom and I've got a pill pulled up in a syringe and I'm staring at it. And I realize that I'm becoming the thing that I said I was never going to become. And the amount of shame that I experienced in that moment, because I remember how not that long ago, I had so much talent and ability and so much promise. And I had a lot of things going for me. And yet here I am 5 short years later. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe this is where I'm at, you know, and that shame and wearing that identity of just being a junkie and a drug addict. And that's how I see myself. When I looked in the mirror, that's who I see. That's who I would see. And I remember thinking, like, you know, there's no coming back from this. I'm too far gone. And I remember shooting up for the first time. And at that same, in that exact moment, my son was knocking on the door. And I feel like I've got these God moments along my story where I just felt like God, the divine, the universe was just calling out to me to take a different path, to take contrary action. And I just wasn't listening. I didn't have the ears to hear, the eyes to see what was going on. And so I remember shooting up and it was off to the races. I moved in with my dad shortly after that, thinking that I was going to take care of him. And I always say that, like, I couldn't even take care of myself. I couldn't even hold down a job. I couldn't get up and function without having drugs. I mean, I was in withdrawals daily unless I had something. I just could not function unless I had the drugs. So I was chemically dependent. This was had become my identity. And so this goes on for several years. And my dad passed away in September of 2014. Without seeing me, you know, become the person that I am today. And I remember at the end of his life, the nurse was asking him, they had given him 6 months to live. And here he is fighting 3 years later. Wow. And at the very end of his life, they were like, why, you're a strong man. Like, why are you fighting so hard? And he said, I want to see my son become the man I know he can be. And a couple of days before he passed, he called me to his bedside. He's in hospice. And I'm looking down at him. He asked everybody to leave. And he was like, son, you're going to come out of this one day and you're going to do some great things for our family, for our community, for the world. Now, Taylor, reminds you, at the time, I was standing there with sweat beads dripping down my face, withdrawing, and all I could think about was getting the next fix. Right.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, he's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, all I am is a junkie, and this is who I am. And a couple of days pass, and I remember being in the bathroom connected to his hospice room, and there's people coming in and out, you know, and my dad's about to pass, and I could hear his heart rate monitor beeping, and it flatlines. And I kid you not, Taylor, I had a syringe in my arm when my dad left this earth. And I thought in that moment, I remember pulling that syringe out of my arm, and I wiped the blood off, and I go over to my dad's bedside, come out of the bathroom, and I go to his bedside. And I give him a kiss on the forehead, and I call my drug dealer, and I'm like, I need something. My dad just died. And after that, the weight of shame and embarrassment and disappointment and despair and hopelessness, everything that I was experiencing, that's who I had become. That was my identity. All of those things had become my identity. I wanted to kill myself, and I tried to commit suicide several times by overdose. And each time I would come to, and I'd be so pissed off. I was so mad. I was so angry because I was still here. I was still alive. And I didn't understand it then. I didn't understand what was happening. I didn't understand that God, the universe, was keeping me here for a much larger purpose. And in 2016, I experienced one of my worst overdoses. And little did I know, the woman who came in actually right outside the view of the camera right here saved my life here in my house, would later become my mother-in-law. Like, my wife and I weren't even together then, but her mom saved me years before we even got together and got married. And so it's just like another one of those God moments. And unfortunately, I came to. I was combative. I was in immediate withdrawal. I told everybody to get the hell out of my house. I wasn't going to the hospital. I didn't need help. I didn't need rehab. And I went right back to it again. And in 2017, my last overdose is February. I remember overdosing on meth and heroin again. And my mom was she went to the hospital with me. And she took a video of me. And I share it sometimes on my Instagram from time to time when I share some of my story. But she took that video because she thought it was going to be the last time she seen me alive. And she was going to use that to hopefully help somebody else that was struggling with addiction. And I remember immediately, shortly after she took that video, I left AMA right back to it. And I eventually got arrested in March of 2017. I got a $180,000 bond set on me. I knew I wasn't getting out. There was nobody going to make that bond for me. And so I knew I was going to be sitting in jail for a while. And shortly after I started my jail stay there and started serving my time, about 3 weeks in, I'd never been a person of faith or anything. And I remember just crying out to God a few weeks in. And I'm like, God, if you're real, show me something. And a pastor came in, and it was such a striking resemblance of my dad. Like, this man, I write out this prayer, and this man shows up, and it's like, He just reminded me of my dad in so many ways. Same mustache, same eye color, same flannel shirt, pants, belt, shoes. He was about my dad's age. My dad had a unique way of shaking my hand if he hadn't seen me in a little while. And so this pastor comes in and shares his faith with me. And it was just it was kind of like my dad had come to visit me. And I remember asking God for this sign, and this man comes in. And so it was transformative. It changed my life. And I knew immediately, and I always describe it now, like I hadn't experienced that feeling of freedom in my entire life, and I was locked up in jail. Because I knew things, everything I had been through was for a much larger reason. And I needed to lean into that. I needed to pursue that. And so shortly after having this divine encounter in jail, my perspective on life changes. My thoughts change, right? The things that I wanted to accomplish, how I was doing my time in jail was changing because there's a saying whenever you're in jail, like you either do your time or your time does you. And so I was like, okay, how can I get better? How can I become healthier? How can I become physically, mentally, emotionally stronger while I'm locked up here? And one of the things that I started doing was just reading everything I could get my hands on. Self-help, development books, reading a lot of the scriptures, a lot of just praying, fasting, working out. We got a men's health body weight workout guide, and I started to work out. And I started falling in love with movement. And I always say my journey to running started when I was serving my time, when I would just run up and down these 20 steps. I'd run or walk up and down these steps every day. Every morning I'd get up, and we had a little common area downstairs. We had common area, and our tables were downstairs, and our bunks were upstairs. And I would come downstairs every morning, 6 o'clock, wake up. You had to get up, make your bed, made a call. And I was like, everybody else is going to be sleeping, but I'm going to get up and I'm going to start moving my body. And that's how I started. For 5 months, I ended up serving 6 months. About 5 months of that time, I was working on myself. I was trying to do my time. I was trying to make the most of, this new lease on life that I had been given. And after being released in August of 2017, I get out and I see a YouTube video with David Goggins. And yeah, it was just like a call out. I felt like he was talking to me. And I was like, oh, my God, I've just been so mediocre in my life. I've been a slob. I've not been taking care of myself. I need to push myself. I need to sign up for something really tough. And so coming out of this addiction, Taylor, 15 years, not doing any type of running, any type of fitness or anything other than the 5 months while I was in jail. I come out, watch this video about a week after I've been released, and I sign up for an Ironman 70.3 beach to battleship in Wilmington. And I didn't do hardly any training. I didn't do any swimming. I'd bought a mountain bike and I didn't do any run. I ran a half a mile before that half Ironman. And I remember I had shin splints so bad, like after that half a mile. And I was like, how in the hell am I going to complete a half marathon? And so I go to this race. And I remember being the first person in the water, the first wave out, right? And there's 1,800 people in the race. I was the last person to get out of the water. So sure. I had 1,799 people pass me.
Wild.
And I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Swimming over top of me, kicking me in the head. And here I am. I'm like, I don't know how to swim. So I'm like floating on my back, backstroking, and I'm just gutting it out, And I end up finishing that race. I actually did decently. I did pretty well. Like 6.5 hours, I finished it.
Oh, nice! Made up some time on the run and the bike, maybe.
The bike. Everybody was freaking out because they're like, "This dude just rode 20. He's like 22 miles an hour on flat pedals. Like,
wow!
I didn't have clip ins. But I had been doing a lot of that leading up to the race. Like, that's the only way. That's the only training that I did really was cycling. So. Anyways, I completed that race. I found out a lot about myself during that, like just to have how to navigate the highs and lows, just keep putting one foot forward, not freaking out, and understand like things are going to come up. Adversity is going to be there. It's just like, how can you process it? How can you work through it? And just feeding off the crowd and honestly just connecting with so many people out there was just absolutely, I knew that I'd found my new addiction, and I was like, I want to continue to pursue endurance sports. And so, while I was locked up, there was a newspaper article that came across the table, and my tribe, I'm Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, from Cherokee, North Carolina. We do a bike ride called Remember the Removal, in honor of our ancestors back in the 1830s and, we retrace the northern route, the Trail of Tears.
Yeah, cool.
And so this is an annual thing that we do with Cherokee Nation, who is from Oklahoma. And I remember reading the article, and it inspired me. And I knew I wanted to do something really tough and challenging for myself, and also to inspire other people who, like me, were struggling with addiction. And so I get out of jail, complete the 70.3, And then I go to sign up for this bike ride. And ultimately I found out because I had a felony drug conviction on my record, they weren't going to allow me to do it. And so I take it all the way to tribal council, our leadership. It's being televised. I'm standing in front of the podium, you know, just fresh in recovery, trying to navigate life, trying to figure out how to live life on life's terms and everything. And I make this bold statement because they told me that they couldn't change the rule. And I remember saying, if we don't let me ride the bike, then I'll run to Oklahoma. And I had no intention of saying that when I went up to the podium. So it was like, I always tell people, like, running really did find me. Like, God closed one door and opened this other door and sent me down this other path. And had that not happened, we probably wouldn't even be talking today. Had that not happened, I wouldn't be a full-time run coach and have a just a growing business and doing the things that I do.
Yeah.
And so this is November 2017, and I realized after what I said, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I'm going to have to put in the work now. And so for the next 5 months, I trained. I was just running everywhere. I'd commute, you know, to town, back to my classes, to my groups. I was just running all the time, just logging miles. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just running. I just knew I had to get miles in.
Yeah.
And during that time, in January is when I ran my first marathon, January 2018. I ran the Emerald Isle Marathon. They changed the date. It used to be in January.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I got down there, and I had my son with me, my nephew, and some of their friends, and my wife. She did Caitlin. She did the half marathon, or she did the 5K. Anyways, I get down there. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm drinking soft drinks. You know, I'm eating. Eating gummies and sweets and everything and chocolate. I had no idea how to fuel. I had no idea how to train. I just knew I was, you know, just trying to get as many miles as I could. And so I finished that first marathon in 5 hours and 25 minutes. And I was one of the last men to finish that day. And I remember, like, they're breaking down the course. I mean, they're shutting it down at 6 hours. So everybody was already leaving. I come across the finish line and I was like, in my mind at that time, I was like, I just crushed that.
You know? Yeah,
I was like,
right.
That was awesome. And I didn't realize there was levels to this whole journey, this grand thing. So I show up the next month at Davidson and they did a 50K. And so this is like the build up to my Trail Tears run. And it was six mile loops. And I remember getting through the first four feeling okay. And then the fifth loop, just the wheels came off. Like, it was rough. And I just walked the last two, and I finished dead last. Finished dead last at that race. And everybody was leaving at that one. But I wasn't doing it for, you know, to place. I wasn't doing it to try to hit some time goal. I was doing it. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was healing.
Yeah.
Every time I was showing up to these things, I was healing. I was learning more about myself. I was growing stronger. I was getting more confidence, more self-esteem. I was committing to a process. I was becoming a different person. And then I went and did the Badwater Cape Fear, 51 miles out on the coast of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I got second to last at that race.
All right.
So my intro to running, Taylor, was everybody sees what I do now, but I sucked out of the gate. Like, I was struggling.
I'm impressed with the miles you were putting on your body, like, so fresh out of everything that you went through. Like, we're only a couple of months post everything, right? Post you getting out, when you're running all of this 51 miler and the ultra and the marathon. It wasn't that far out.
It wasn't.
I'm just impressed with how little training you got, like how many miles you were able to get under your belt so quickly. It's pretty impressive.
Me too. And I mean, I didn't have any significant injuries. So I finished that Badwater, and Chris Kossman, I remember, you know, shaking his hand, meeting him, the director, obviously, of Badwater 135, and he's got a couple other races there. But I was just thinking, I was telling my wife a few minutes ago, I was like, I won't have to sign up because I'm ready to start training for a Transcon run. I want to go back to Badwater in 2025 and try to win it. And so that'd be pretty sweet to go from second to last to possibly winning it.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
But anyways, you know, I train. Badwater was my last event before the Trail of Tears run. And so May 14th of 2018, I embarked on that journey, and I ran almost 800 miles, right at 800 miles in 40 days, and finished on my birthday. I took some rest days from time to time, but I ran 40 days total and finished on my birthday, June 28th, 2018, and raised money for my nonprofit organization, Raise Hope Recovery and Consulting. I got to share my story on several different regional news networks. I connected with so many people that I'm still close to this day in Oklahoma. I just came from an event in Oklahoma where we showed my documentary, kind of retelling that story, sharing my story and the Trail of Tears run and what we're doing now. And so that's a snippet of like how I got into running. That's how I started my journey.
Yeah, I'm just in awe. Like, I'm just sitting here trying to soak it all in, because that's an insane way to get into an endurance sport. And I liked how you said it, that running or endurance really found you, because I think, although like your experience is obviously on the extreme side, I think a lot of people can relate to that with just, you know, trauma and how when you go through something like that, you have all this energy that you have to put somewhere. And that's where running kind of meets you in the middle, I think. Thank you for walking through all that. The Trail of Tears runs, I'm just curious, like you said that they weren't allowing you to bike the race with them, and that's when you committed to running with them. What was their reaction when you did actually run the whole thing? Did you get kind of that side of the story?
Yeah, actually, it was pretty cool. Whenever I first said it, when I made that proclamation that I was going to do this, right, I remember people scoffing. I remember people scoffing and looking at me and kind of rolling their eyes, which just lit a fire under my butt even more.
Sure.
But as I started showing up, people started to kind of get behind me, get behind the cause, get behind what I was doing. And I remember when I finished, some of the same ones that scoffed and laughed at me in Cherokee flew out to Oklahoma to watch me finish.
Wow.
And so I started to gain a lot of support, you know, through that journey and everything, and support that I still have today. So it was definitely a mindset shift for a lot of people, though, once they see me doing the work and accomplish it.
Yeah.
It was, and then like in Cape Girardeau, Missouri was one of their stops. I took the binge route. There's several different routes. Binge, Bell, Northern, Water Route, or that's like four of the popular ones. But I took the binge route, and they take the Northern route. But they cross over. They cross over in Cape Girardeau, right around Missouri. And so my wife and I were heading to a running store. She had to go get some chafe cream or something. And so we pull into this running store, and lo and behold, there's the RTR riders.
Oh, no way.
And I had started like a couple of weeks before they started their journey. Obviously, they're covering 1,000 miles in like 20 days.
Sure.
But it was cool to run into them and just see to get the support from them, and just seeing how proud of me that they were. And so I got a ton of support from people, though.
That's great. No, that's great. And I'm curious about kind of the logistics of that whole thing, because that's quite the journey to embark on. So like you said, you didn't know a lot about fuel going into your first marathon and your second couple ultra marathons. Were you starting to pick up on different like fuel strategies and things like that as you were doing the 40 day?
Still didn't have a clue.
Okay.
Still didn't have a clue. I was drinking, I was drinking Red Bulls every day.
Wow.
I mean, multiple Red Bulls every day. I was, just eating a ton of sweets.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, whenever you do something like that, it's all about getting calories down, right? So it probably, I mean, was it optimal? No, but I was definitely fueled. I was getting enough calories in.
Gotcha.
I was over consuming sugar and everything probably. And, but no, I still didn't have a clue. I wasn't taking gels. I wasn't taking liquid carbs. No, I didn't know any products really. Somebody introduced me to Hammer Nutrition about 3 weeks into my run. And so I started taking some Hammer Heed and, you know, some liquid carbs but other than that, I had no idea. And I wouldn't know that until after I finished, when I started diving into the sport a little bit more.
Wild. Yeah. That's pretty crazy. And how many miles would you say on average you were putting in a day through that, the whole thing?
I was doing 20 miles a day average, but there were several days where I was running 30, 40 miles. My aunt passed away actually from endocarditis, which is an infection of the heart from her drug use. She had a massive heart attack about 2 weeks into my journey. And it's, you know, one of those crossroads moments is, you know, adversity struck, and it was my first significant loss, you know, since being in recovery. And I had a decision to either stop and come back home and be with the family, or let my mom come back home. It was her sister, and, you know, be with the family and everything, and me continue the run. And so we decided pretty quickly, like, no, your aunt would want you to finish this. Like, you need to go out and finish this for her. And so, you know, that's what I decided to do. But a few days after she passed away, I ran 49 miles one day for her.
Wow.
In honor of, you know, every year she was alive. And then a couple of weeks after that, I was attempting to run 100 miles in one day. Had no idea. Like I said, I had no idea what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
And I got to 56 miles and dropped. But yeah, I mean, I made a couple of big efforts like that during the run.
Yeah, that's just wild. And how was your body feeling like after those bigger days where you would really just push yourself kind of to your limit? Like, what was recovery like? What were you feeling during that time?
I remember sleeping a lot of times. Like, we're joking pretty much the whole time out there, because I would wait till the hottest part of the day to start. And so I didn't do a very good job of like prioritizing getting up early, having some downtime in the evening to kind of rest, recover, and then, you know, just get on a good schedule. And so, we wouldn't start a lot of times, you know, until like 12, 1 o'clock in the day. And it's like at least 90 degrees most days when we're starting. Missouri, it was 105, 110, a lot of the days that we were running. And so I had no idea, like now that I'm diving into, all the details and logistics for the Transcon 2025, like, it's going to be night and day different, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but you said that you, like, after it was a little bit after you, you completed that big feat, that you started to like really dive into the sport and learn a little bit more about nutrition and like strategy and things like that. So what happened next, I guess, from there?
Taylor, I've had such a crazy journey in endurance sports and running and everything.
Sure.
So after I finished that, so that's 2018. 2019 was like the year of ultras. I got into a lot of ultra marathons. Attempted several 50 milers. I finished a couple 50 milers. Attempted a couple 100 milers. DNF'd. And again, I didn't start really diving into the sport until probably 2020. So from 2018 to 2020, I was all over the place. It was a free for all. I was just signing up for stuff and I just go out and try to complete it.
Yeah.
No structured training, no coach, no nothing. Just going out and just shooting from the hip. And now looking back, and now I see why I had some DNFs and,
sure,
you know, had some struggles out there. But, you know, I think a lot of times experience is the best teacher. You just got to put yourself in situations, and I think that's how we get better at something, is just showing up and sucking at it and figuring out, you know, making mistakes along the way, you know, and then we're kind of ready for some guidance and for some coaching and stuff. And that's how it was for me. But 2020, I started diving into half marathons a little bit more.
Okay.
And so that's kind of how I started, you know, before I transitioned over to the marathon, I started doing half marathons. And I ran my first one, I think it was late 2018. I ran like a 130 something. And I had no idea, but somebody's like, that's pretty good. You know, maybe you think you can get faster at this. And I was like, all right. So ran 127, a 124, a 121. And then I was like, okay, like I'm getting pretty fast now. So in 2021, I hired me a coach and worked with him for over 2 years. And so I think my next marathon was 2022, and I ran Missoula. Now, mind you, this was after Emerald Isle, and I ran 525.
Right.
So my second marathon that I ever trained for, well, the first marathon I ever really trained for, but my second marathon ever, I ran a 247.
Wow.
It was 247. Yeah. And So that's kind of how I got introduced to the marathon, though.
Yeah, that's incredible, that jump that you made from like your first marathon experience to your second marathon experience. I know there was a lot of time in between, but that's just incredible. What do you feel like helped you with speed before you got a coach? Was it just consistency, or was there anything else that you felt like you were doing that, you know, was helping in that area?
Speed. I'm a big alternations guy. Like if I'm coaching myself, like I said, which I've done from time to time, but, I love doing alternations. I love doing, you know, long run alternations. Maybe it's 800 meters on, 800 meters off, one mile on, 1 mile off. Just kind of hitting that threshold, learning how to clear that, teaching the body how to use that for energy. That's one of the things, that's like one of my go-tos. That's what I was doing a lot of. I'd get on the track and do some 800s, do some mile repeats, do some K repeats, things like that. I don't do that a whole lot. Like if I'm coaching myself, that's something that I use sparingly about every 14 days. That type of effort's just really, really taxing on the body. And so, but I was doing a lot of that type of stuff, some longer interval work, some alternation work, hill reps. Hill reps is one of my favorite things to do, not only for myself, but for my athletes as well. It just doesn't beat up the body. You know, we can get a lot of power development, a lot of speed development, out of hill reps. And so I was incorporating a lot of those things that I just mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And, I guess through that time too, before you had taken on the coach and everything, like, there was clearly something about the ultra distance or longer distances that kept you hooked, even though you had a couple DNFs and maybe races that didn't go your way. Like, what would you, if you boiled it down to one thing, what would you say that thing was that just kept you coming back during that time?
I feel like as humans, we are created for adventure. And I feel like a lot of times we are missing that in our lives, you know, and I love the adventure of it. I love the challenge of it. I love learning how to navigate the highs and lows, because I feel like it translates very well into our everyday life. Whenever you can just handle that, just going through the shit, you know, riding the wave, like you're doing really well. And then boom, something bad happens. Like how like that, not only does it build character, but it reveals character. You know, it really tells you who you are during tough times and adversity and those tough moments. And so I felt like I was becoming a stronger, more resilient version of myself. And I was becoming addicted to that, you know, and then also too, just getting the opportunity to travel.
Yeah. You know,
I find myself standing in places like I would, just to rewind for a second, I would look out of the jail window, Taylor, when I was locked up multiple times a week. And there's an Ingles a couple hundred yards down the road. And I'd be standing up there. It was upstairs where our bunk area was at. And I'd just be sitting up there, my arms on the windowsill, and I'm looking out. And I'd just be people watching at that Ingles. And I'd be thinking to myself, man, if I can get out of here, you know, once I get out of here, like I want to live my life differently. I want to go out. I want to seek adventure. I want to push myself. I'm not going to live a life of mediocrity. And so that was just like me keeping that promise to myself. And this is how I was doing it. You don't have to go to that extreme. You know, you can find anything, hiking, canoe, kayaking, whatever, rock climbing, like whatever that form of movement is for you. Like, but for me, it was running. For me, it was, you know, getting out and pushing my body and breaking down my body, my mind, and just building it back up again and learning who I was in those moments. And so that's what appealed to me in the ultra space. Like all those things I just mentioned, I just love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it was very healing for you. I think you said that in the beginning, just something that you could put all of your attention towards and work towards, which is super important. But that's great. So from there, I'm curious, like, when did you start to be passionate about coaching other people? Was it like shortly after you had brought on a coach and thought that world was pretty cool? Or when did that, you know, make its way into your life?
Well, I had a lot of people probably around 2020, 2019. I had some people around 2019, 2020 reaching out to me. asking me for advice, and I'm like, you're asking the wrong person. I don't have a clue what the hell I'm doing. I'm just like going out shooting from the hip. But you know, I would try to like send people advice and little tidbits that I've been picking up on things I've been reading and stuff. And I started having more and more people ask me. And so it was just a thing out of necessity. Like I wanted to learn more because I felt like God was leading me down this path, you know, like more people are asking. So there's something to this. I need to pursue this and see what it's about. And so I started just doing some personal training, one-on-one stuff. I went and got my personal training certification back in 2021. And around that time, just started coaching people in the gym, started helping people with their running, and learning a lot from my coaches. You know, I had one, I worked with him for a short time. I think we worked together for about 6 months. And then I had another one that we worked together for over 2 years. And just them gleaning, gleaning wisdom and what they've learned and, you know, their coaching philosophy and kind of digging in, doing a lot of my own research. I just started to kind of lean into it a little bit more. And then I started coaching full time. I remember going to my wife at the end of 2021. Yeah, it was like around December of 2021. And I was like, I've got some in-person clients, you know, I've got some more people that want to sign up. I was like, what do you think about me pursuing this full time? And at the time I've been working at a homeless shelter. And I just felt like I was being called this different direction. I had no idea, Taylor, how it was going to go. I didn't know how I was going to make ends meet, but I felt like I could do it, you know? And even if I couldn't, I was going to fall flat on my face because that's just the life. That's the way I live my life. Like I'd rather aim high and miss than aim low and hit.
Sure. Yeah.
And so she was like, if you think you can, you know, put some food on the table, help pay the bills, then go for it. And so I did. I stepped into coaching full time, mainly personal training, you know, one-on-one personal training. But then it just started to transition over just naturally to run coaching. And so I've been doing that for almost 3 years full time.
Wow. Yeah. And you mentioned you had a couple coaches that you like pulled from their coaching philosophy. Do you remember what those things were that you found in them that you were like, ah, that's something I can adopt for me as well?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I had one guy, he got fourth place in the steeple back in 2012, wow. At the Olympic trials. So high level guy, he was a sub-4 minute miler. I think he's like a 2:14 marathoner. But I would always try to do speed work, right? And he'd be like, listen, you're trying to focus on the marathon. We don't have to do a lot of speed work because the marathon's all about managing fatigue, right? It's right. All about building that endurance, all about learning how to manage fatigue when the body's just broken down, you're beat up, and then but you still got to generate some leg turnover. You walk biomechanically, you need to be sound. And so he really helped me to lean into that aspect of things. Like, don't focus on speed. Like, let's do that for a short time, but then let's transition over for 6, 8, 10 weeks. And we're just teaching the body how to manage fatigue before you go into your race. And so that's one of the things I picked up from him. The thing that I picked up from my second coach, who I spent a lot more time with, was like my love for blended workouts. Now, like his love for blended workouts, seeing how those help me get benefits in my own training. For instance, like once you get deeper into marathon training, maybe you go something like a 4 mile tempo at maybe it's something a little right around half marathon effort or 10K effort, right? So you got a significant warm up, 2-3 miles, 4 mile tempo. You're a little bit fatigued. Do a 2-3 minute jog, 800 meter jog. And then you're ripping some 800s at the end of it at like 5K pace. So it's basically the same thing. Like you're teaching your body how to manage that fatigue, how to finish strong at the end of a race. And a lot of the bigger marathon paced workouts, I see a lot of people doing things like 8 miles easy, 8 miles at marathon pace, like these big, big blocks of marathon pace. And he was like, we don't have to do that. That's really taxing on the body. Like we can get the same benefits from those type of workouts by breaking them down. And so he was using a lot of things like maybe 5 mile warm up, maybe it's 5 by 2 miles at marathon, just faster than marathon pace. And then we rip something faster on the back end of that. Like, and just learning how to break things down. And also too, like helping your athletes navigate like through their daily life and day-to-day stress. Like, not everybody's the same, right? I've got some athletes who are single, you know, they've got plenty of free time. And then I've got some athletes who, their stay-at-home mom got four kids and two of them's under 2 years old. Like, and learning how to navigate that, learning how to check in with your athletes, learning how they might execute better at this workout than this athlete does. So like, I just had to modify one of their workouts the other day because I noticed she was struggling to hit some mile reps. And so I was like, okay, she's got 4x1 mile workout. She's really struggling to hit that. And then understanding the underlying issue of like, well, she's not getting good sleep. So let's break that workout down a little bit more. Let's build that confidence up. Let's do some 800 meter reps at the same type of effort. And so it's like learning your athletes, learning how to navigate those daily work life stress. The things that I was just mentioning, like staying away from a lot of the speed workouts during marathon focused work, do a touch of speed. Those big workouts, how to break those things down. Like, these are all things just off the top of my head that they taught me. I think that's really paid off in my coaching.
Yeah, that's great. And is it mostly the marathon distance that you coach for, or do you do other distances as well?
Mostly marathon. I love the marathon. It's something that I love it personally. And I just think it's just long enough where you can really cook and you can really race it. But it also too, it's long enough to where it's super, super challenging and you got to learn how to manage fatigue. And I just love the distance. I love coaching the distance.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. And I know we only talked about your first two marathon experiences for you personally, but is there one like after your first two that's particularly memorable for you that made you like fall in love with the marathon distance even more, I guess you could say?
Boston 2023. Oh, cool. Yeah, I ran 2:40:24 at Boston last year. Wow. And got top 600, top 700, which, you know, coming from where I came from to where I am today, being able to accomplish that, it really lit a fire in me. And it's something that I'm still pursuing today. Like, ultimately, 4 years from now, how close can I be to the Olympic trial standard? I don't know. But I would love to be running sub 2:30 in the next couple of years. So, but yes, that race was memorable. It was hot. It was raining. It was challenging out there. You know, it was my first time on the Boston course. Despite all the rain and the bad weather, I mean, there were so many people out there and the atmosphere was just electric. And another reason that it was significant to me is because 10 years prior, I came down these steps that you see behind me.
Yeah.
And the TV's right over here out of the screen. And I come down these steps and I see a news story come up. The Boston bombing had just taken place. Taylor, I didn't know a damn thing about running or Boston or anything. And then I find myself 10 years later standing at the start line of the Boston Marathon and looking back at where my life was 10 years prior. It was special to me because I was like, I was so sick and withdrawn that day. I mean, it was just like, I was pretty much every day, you know? And I was just like thinking back, like, I can't believe I'm standing here. Like, who would have thought when I seen that article or seen that story come across, like I would be here 10 years later. Not only would I be here participating, have qualified for the Boston Marathon, but ripping a 2:40. Yeah. Like, it just goes to show, like, don't give up. You never know where life's going to lead you. I don't care how bad it may seem. You know, you can always come back. You can always pick yourself up. And that's what it's about. It's like not allowing life circumstances, adversity to keep you down, you know, and finding something that you're passionate about, finding some people that will walk along beside you during the journey, that will believe in you, that will cheer you on. You know, and that's how I'm here today.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I love that a lot. And I think that that's great advice for anybody, whether, you know, you're a newer runner that's listening to this podcast, or you're somebody who's a little bit more experienced. You know, I think that advice is applicable to everybody in just life. But I'm curious also, like, where are your goals from here? Because you've accomplished so much, and you've got your coaching journey that you're on now. You're on your own personal marathon journey. You said you're training for transcontinental?
Transcon.
Yeah. So what are those goals like for you for what's coming up next?
Well, I'm getting ready to start working with my new coach in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And he's a two-time Olympic trial qualifier in the marathon in 96 and 2000. He's coached several sub 4 minute milers. He's local, pretty local. He's to Asheville, so it's about an hour away. Cool. So I'm going to get to train some with his high school kids. And but we're looking at doing Richmond Marathon in November 16th, and we're going to be chasing a sub 237. And I'll take a couple weeks off, and then it's like it's all hands on deck. You know, I mean, we're going to be grinding it out, starting to log a bunch of miles, get ready for the Transcon. So I'll be training for Transcon December, January, February, and then starting the Transcon March 2025, and be raising money for our nonprofit organization. I'm trying to hit $300,000 for our nonprofit, which we focus on helping men who are struggling with mental health and substance use disorder. And we've got a recovery house here in our community. So we'll be trying to fund that operational budget. And along the way, though, like I said a few minutes ago, I want to go back to Badwater. So yeah. Go back to Badwater, Cape Fear. I think it's going to be in February. So it'd be a good training run. And I also want to go back to Land O'Lakes 100, the Long Call 100, it's called.
Okay.
I DNF'd Long Call in 2019. And I dropped at mile 75. So I've got some unfinished business at Long Call. I want to go down there and rip 100 and see how fast I can finish that one. And then Badwater, and then the Transcon run, which I'll start in San Francisco and run to Wilmington. So wow. I hope you'll be out there joining me for some miles.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you've got a crazy amount of dates on the calendar for right now. And I know you mentioned a little bit earlier that like training for this Transcon race is going to be a little bit more like technical, logistically technical. Do you mind just like walking through what you're doing to prepare for that one?
Yeah. So it'll be, obviously there's several ways to skin a cat, right? There's a lot of different roads that lead to Rome. So depending on who you ask that's done a Transcon, you're going to get a different training philosophy. But what I'm wanting to do is you got to train for the terrain that you're going to be running on, which is going to be mainly road. So I'll be doing a lot of road running. Mm-hmm. I will be implementing some softer services a couple of days a week, just kind of give the body a little bit of a break. But I'll be doing a couple, like at least 1 or 2 days of strides, just to keep some leg turnover. Just keep the legs fresh, you know, and hitting some different intensities. Be doing some heel reps, some a track workout here and there, maybe once a week or something. But ultimately, I'll be running probably 100 miles a week, something like that. And I'll start building up, probably hit 200 miles a couple of different times, 200 miles in a week. Ultimately, I'm going to be running about 60 miles a day. So I got to start teaching my body how to manage that fatigue and that stress. And honestly, the main thing it's going to be is just learning how to get down calories. Like, I talked to one of my buddies, Griffin Wooden, who many people that listen to this podcast probably going to know Paul Johnson. Mm-hmm. Just ran Transcon. You know, he's the veteran raising money for mental health for veterans and stuff. But Griffin was on Paul's crew. And so he was just telling me about, like, we got to start nailing down nutrition. You got to learn how to eat 9, 10, 11, 12,000 calories a day. Like, that's going to be the main thing. Like, if we can fuel your body, right, we can keep it moving. So it's all going to be a fueling issue. And so making sure that I can get down enough fuel every day is going to be just training my gut, you know? So that's one of the things I'll be working on. So like I say, I'll have a little bit of downtime after my marathon. Just kind of recharge the batteries, let the body heal up a little bit after racing Richmond. And then it'll be cranking up the volume, 100-mile weeks, track workout here and there, some strides here and there, some heel reps. And that's how we'll start prepping for it.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to follow along. I hope you post quite a bit about it so that we can all see see your journey through this whole thing.
Oh, I'll be posted because we gotta raise some money, Taylor.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, we gotta be sharing for you. And that leads me kind of to one of my last questions is just where can people find you so that they can follow along with you and support you on your journey here?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. It's at RecoveryLine86 and Facebook. It's under my name, Caleb McCoy II. Also, I'd like to plug in our nonprofit organization. On Instagram, it's going to be the official Res Hope. I can send that over to you so you can link it in the show notes.
Yep, absolutely.
And then we also have a website. So I can share that with you as well for anybody who wants to get behind what we're doing and what we're trying to, you know, how we're trying to help our community and everything. We would really appreciate the support.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll make sure to link everything below for sure.
Oh, and my coaching, Lions Den Fitness at Instagram, on Instagram.
Can't forget that. That's important. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, I really appreciate you just walking through all of your journey and honestly just being like open and vulnerable about everything. So I think when people are on podcasts like this or just on social media, it ends up helping more people than you think. I know that I'm preaching to the choir talking to you about that kind of thing, but just appreciate you being open and honest and about your journey and everything.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, you're doing a great job getting these conversations out, and you're a natural at this, Taylor. So keep doing what you're doing, girl.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying MFM, it would mean a lot to me if you could rate and review this episode wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you know anyone training right now, I'd love if you shared it with them too. See you on the next one.